Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey everybody, welcome to the special bonus episode of the Jug Life Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to be interviewing one of our co-hosts, Max Ada, so you can get to know the Montana Miracle Man a little bit better.
Hi, I'm Max Ada. I live in California, both Northern California and Southern California. I'm 33 years old. My parents named me, the story I was told, why my middle name is Montana. In the early 80s, when my parents moved from the East Coast to Montana, they were huge fucking hippies, and they decided to call me Montana. I think honestly, actually, my dad was probably in the witness protection program, because he just left. They just left New Jersey out of nowhere and totally moved to Montana. There was no one there. It was a small town, Bozeman. It was like 30,000 people at the time, and I was born there. We used to live in this like log cabin. My dad was like a record salesman, kind of sold like videos and records and stuff, and that was just coming out. VHS was just coming out at the time, and he started a farm. So like he had this farm thing, this like geese and other weird animals and stuff like that, and he was just no idea what he was doing. I look back on it now and I realize my dad was like, he was crazy. So, you know, they named me Montana. All my other brothers, sisters all have normal names. My brother escaped the name Darth. It would have been called Darth Ada, which I think now actually would be kind of fitting and cool. But, you know, so I grew up in Montana the whole time, lived in this log cabin. At one point in time, there would be, like, mushrooms and, like, weeds and stuff growing up through the floor. So we were, like, in the woods, basically. I mean, it was legit, the full Montana experience. My dad kept the video rental business going. My brother worked for him. My brother was older than me. I worked for him. Neither of my sisters worked for him. But, you know, he had an adult video section in the video store. And there's some strange shit that goes on. People renting movies, like, you get people renting, like, adult films and Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen movies at the same time. Like, you just, it was weird. There was some cool times. I mean, he had the video store until 2012. Before he sold it to some lady who I guess thought it was a good idea to buy a video store in 2012. We worked for him. My brother worked for him. I got excited by the idea of like working for yourself, watching my dad do that, like watching my dad kind of, you know, run his own business, and he worked for himself. He did what he wanted, you know, and kind of was in charge of his own life. And I think that inspired me a lot. When I was older, to sort of get out of working, I really hated working for people. Like, I didn't enjoy it. I didn't like the whole, you know, 9 to 5, show up and get a paycheck thing. And that you know, that obviously led me into owning a gym later, you know, from weightlifting and from the idea of like kind of owning my own gym or owning my own business and working for myself. I was kind of a natural progression, I think, to that. But, you know, I didn't go to school. I didn't go to college. I went for 3 weeks because I had to beat my dad, who went for 2 weeks. And so I felt like after 3 weeks and after having beat him, that was sufficient. So I'm kind of a competitive person. So I always feel like it was important to one up somebody. You know, I started lifting. The earliest memories I have of lifting, like my father asked for this weight set for Christmas, you know, and he, it was like one of those like plastic plastic and sand filled, you know, who knows how much it cost, $100 things at, he got that for Christmas, I think, for my mother. He probably used it one time right after he set it up. And he just, I guarantee that was it. But my brother and I went down there, and I was probably 11, and we would work out on that like all the time. Just go in there and do curls. I remember doing floor presses because I wouldn't, like I brought the bar and stuff into my room at one point in time. And I got really scared that like, oh shit, if I do these floor presses, like if I don't go all the way down, like my muscles are going to be like stuck and frozen in this position. And I mean, they kind of are, but you know, I was like terrified of that. So I would do like every exercise I could possibly think of, because at some point you kind of get strong and it's like 60 pounds and you're just, you know, you're doing the same thing over and over. So I just do all sorts of stuff. I remember doing clean and presses kind of, which I'm sure were not actually cleans, but, you know, doing that with my brother for a while. Then, you know, I found like the lifting in like the middle school, like actual, weights, and we had like a little instructor, like the gym teacher, and you could kind of access that gym after school and go and work out. And I remember doing all that stuff and like finding the leg press and kind of knowing like I was supposed to do some kind of, you know, balanced routine, and I'd squat and curl and, you know, press and those kind of things. And it wasn't like formal or intelligent in any regard, but it was to that degree. Later, though, you know, we're older, after I started weightlifting, we had, you know, we had, like, our own gym set up. We, at one point in time, we rented an apartment, me and three other guys. We rented an apartment, and we had the weights set up in this, like, external garage that had no insulation in it. And in Montana, in the winter, every, like, January, it gets down to, like, 20 to 30 below zero, and it was like the garage faced, like did not face the sun. So in the morning it would be in the shade. So in the shade plus, you know, 30 below. One day it was 40 degrees below zero in the garage, and we still worked out. We used to take the bars and bring them into the apartment at night and leave them in the apartment so they'd be warm. We go out there and we start working out. It was so cold that my first coaches, these two guys that were, one was like a Vietnam vet and one was just crazy, as crazy as the other one. They were like, they would show up to the gym with these two coffee cups, huge coffee cups, and they would get like, it was so cold, no one wanted to go outside. So they just like use a coffee cup as a toilet, like they'd pee in it and just leave it in the garage. Obviously, they'd like, you know, take it out after we're done, but it was so freezing outside, no one ever wanted to leave. It was a very interesting experience, to say the least. But, you know, I look back on it now and I think like, oh, it was really great to have done that stuff, because it was really, you know, it was really like a, I guess, character building kind of thing to like, you know, to, all we cared about was lifting. All we cared about was like getting better and training and pushing ourselves. And so like, it wasn't ever a matter of like, oh, it's cold, like this, we're doing this because we're tough. It was like, oh shit, it sucks, it's cold, you know, but we still want to work out. So we went and did it. If I was going to do a different sport other than lifting, what would I want to do? That's a hard one. I would, you know, I don't. Do I have to be good at it? I guess not. Like, because I'm probably not a very good athlete at the other stuff.
Describe your running.
The first time I ran in front of my wife, she turned around. We had to run to a bus stop. So I was running behind her to catch a bus stop. She turned around and looked at me, and she told me later that she felt bad watching me run. She felt like noticeably distraught seeing that she had put somebody in a place that they had to do that with their body in public. So, I mean, I would, you know, a sport I would pick would probably be something that's totally different. Like, I don't know, some kind of like field sport or something. I mean,
Korfball
or something really popular. Orienteering, korfball, handball. I don't know, other... Hi-a-lie sounds cool, because you got basically a weapon and a ball, and that sounds like it'd be cool. Anything, I think that if I was, you know, if I was gonna do a different sport, I would pick a sport that allowed me to associate with a different type of person, like really rich people, like Miami Vice kind of people. Like, you know, you go in and you walk in and you have like a blazer rolled up. Don Johnson's waiting for you to play your next match. Racquetball, maybe. That'd be fucking cool. A last meal for myself would probably be, how much time do I have left?
Well, I mean, you don't have to cook it yourself. I didn't mean that.
Oh.
What would you eat for your last meal?
Oh, like I'm gonna get, if I'm going to get executed?
From anywhere, yes.
I mean, well, it depends on how many macros I have left. last meal would definitely be like steak, like probably a huge bone-in filet or something, and mashed potatoes, and would be something like at Mastro's. That was good. Lobster mashed potatoes, cream spinach, big piece of meat filet.
Milk steak?
Milk steak. Probably an extra large milk steak with a side of jelly beans, boiled over hard. If I wasn't coaching, what job would I have? I was thinking about this morning. I don't think I honestly would do anything else. Because I, like, when I find myself in places where I'm like, oh, you know, if I wasn't doing this, if I wasn't, you know, here coaching, like, I'd probably be doing something different. And then I'm like, you know, I'd probably be coaching because I'd probably walk into a gym somehow, end up in there, and then end up starting to tell people they're doing it wrong, you know, and point out all the flaws and make them feel bad about themselves and decisions they've made in their life. If I didn't do that, I would probably be in some kind of trade, I'm guessing, you know, some kind of...
Coaching or homeless?
Coaching or homeless. It's a lifestyle. You know, I'm not the kind of coach who's like rah-rah, like cheerleader kind of guy, because I don't feel like... I never felt like I needed that when I lifted. Like, if you want to do it, you want to do it. I mean, if it's 40 degrees below zero outside, you want to train, you're going to go train. If you need that extra push, you're probably already, you're already behind the ball, in my, you know, behind the eight ball, in my opinion. You're always needing something you're not going to get, or you should have that, because you're the only one on the platform. You go out on the platform, you don't feel motivated, like, what are you doing there? So I'm not the rah-rah person. I think it's important. I don't think it's negative or shameful to point out in a very critical way where people have gone wrong. It's important to know what you're doing right and wrong. So I like to explain that to people very clearly and concisely, the mistakes they've made. The more advanced people, they kind of know it, so you just reinforce that. Some of the younger guys, it's important that they also, maybe they feel a little bit too proud of their quality of lift, and I have to cut them down a little bit. And make sure they know that, you know, if you don't clean it up, we're going to not take you to nationals. Or if we do take you to nationals, you're going to wait in the car if you keep lifting like that.
This is a question from Instagram. Would you rather fight one Chad-sized duck or 100 duck-sized Chads?
A Chad-sized duck is horrific. A horrific thought. But it would probably be a... That's brutal. I don't know, though. See, I don't know if I could bring myself... I could probably... I'm visualizing it now in my head. I could probably strangle one organism. I could kill one thing one time. I could bring myself to that. Could I do that 100 times? I don't know.
Charlie Kelly type of...
Would I find that maybe I enjoyed it after six or seven of them, and now I have a problem? I'm gonna say one Chad-sized duck.
If you had a personal theme song that played when you walked into rooms, what would it be?
It would be the theme song to Growing Pains. For sure. One of my favorite moments ever, probably ever in my life. So Abhijaev lived in the house, and Abhijaev did his own laundry, and he had a wool sweater, and he's probably 5 foot. He was like 5'3", maybe 5'4", very, very short, maybe 5'5". You know, and he was pretty overweight at the time. You know, he's heavy. So he had his belly, and he had a wool sweater that he had washed, and it shrunk because he probably put it on really hot water and then dried it at, you know, maximum heat, came out felted and It was the size for a child. Like, 11-year-old kid would put it on and be like, "Mom, this sweater is tight." He comes downstairs and he's fucking livid because the sweater is ruined and the washing machine is broken because the washing machine ruined his sweater. Now, he goes back upstairs, comes back down 20 minutes later with the solution to this problem. And that solution is he has taken the sweater and put it on himself. It comes up to here. So it's like down like 3/4 of the way down his arm, both arms, super tight on this 75-year-old overweight man. The shirt comes down to his belly button. But his fix for this was to grab the shirt and pull it down below his belly button and take a leather dress belt and cinch it around his stomach so that the shirt wouldn't slide up. So now he's walking around with a leather belt outside of his sweater, tightened around his stomach, as tight as can possibly be so that it pulls the sweater down below his belly button. Still, the bottom 4 inches of his stomach is hanging out of the sweater. The sweater is coming down midriff. He's got a midriff sweater here, leather belt tied on tight. Everything is being squeezed out on top, on bottom. But he's still, you know, the most infamous weightlifting coach you've ever seen. Just intimidating and scary, yet wearing this fucking getup that is so weird. Sitting in a chair yelling at us, just looking at everyone in weightlifters with complete disgust. Stomach hanging out, belt cinched down tight, just sweater coming down to his forearms, you know. He was so proud of the fix, too. So proud of his method for fixing the broken sweater. I'm pretty sure he wore the sweater 3 or 4 more times like that, too. It wasn't just once.